Pat's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the second hour of the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Friday morning. Good Friday morning to you. We made it to Friday. Still employed. Have not been fired yet. Just pray for me, if you will, that you'll hear my voice on Monday morning, because I certainly will be not fired yet. So very, very, very thankful for that. So to come on the program at the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from columnist Steve Flowers. He'll be with us. And in the 11 o'clock hour, my friend State Senator Chris Elliott will join us talking about some state politics, what's going on, and what's the dynamic going on out there with COVID-19. Coastal economy, big important stuff in Baldwin County. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Before going to break, we're talking about, I guess it was a gaffe or just an ill-advised comment from Joe Biden. And late last night, he needed to have a staffer come in and do cleanup for him, and went on put out a series of tweets saying that he didn't mean to suggest the African American community was a monolith, not by identity, not on issues. And then he talks about himself some, and he says, quote, "My commitment to you is this: I will always listen. I will never stop fighting for the African American community, and I will never stop fighting for a more equitable future." Well, so that should make everything better, right? This just goes away. It's probably, like, imagine you watch nothing but MSNBC and CNN, and you only read the New York Times because all that other stuff out there is crazy. Fox News lies. Talk radio is for dum-dums, and it's just dumb right-wingers. And all of a sudden, you're on Twitter, and you see that tweet come out of somewhere. And you're like, where did this come from? You're probably like, wow, it's like an alternate universe or something. But Joe Biden had to clean it up, and here we are. The world is better. Race relations are solved, or whatever you want to say. So the race is tightening, guys. It's not the free fall Donald Trump was going. It was in, I think, at the beginning of the summer. The way this always works is you have four. The summers are always tough on the Republican candidate, traditionally. And you have the civil unrest, summers in presidential elections. It just seems to be that's the historic norm going back decades. Go back and look at it over and over again. And there was no reason to think this margin, at least the national polling margin, which I really would say don't, I discount that a lot, is where the state of the outcome will be ultimately. But it wasn't going to remain, 17 points or whatever the national media were telling you. Because we don't elect, first of all, we don't elect presidents based on national polls. The only reason you watch national polls is because of trends. Furthermore, who's being polled? Who is the sample? Pay attention to that sample. If they survey adults, it's going to lead way Democrat. If they survey just registered voters, it'll lead Democrat. If they survey likely voters, then you got a better sense, a real sense of what's going on, but it won't be as skewed toward Democrats. So national media, they like to highlight the polls of adults and registered voters more than likely voters because they favor Democrats, and it makes it seem like things are getting out of control. Anyway, even those surveys are starting to tighten. And it's all because of what's... Biden has been unimpressive, I think, for a lot of people. That he's always having to clean up a gaffe, or he's stumbling around. He's saying stuff that doesn't make sense, or he's not out in public. These are going to have real consequences on his electability. Whether people want to admit it or not, or make this all about Donald Trump, a lot of Americans are still going to look at it as a choice and not a referendum on Trump. That's just, the Democrats would like it to be a referendum on Trump. But Biden's a liability for the Democratic Party. There's no way to say, I mean, at this point today, can he clean it up? And we're not even talking about that. Could he clean it up and get it together? There's no reason to think that. But that brings me to my next point. This is kind of a This is a crazy story here. So the Democrat convention's coming up. It's very scaled down. It's all virtual. So we're told, according to Politico. Who's going to speak at the Democrat Zoom meeting or whatever you want to call it? Well, we know we got Elizabeth Warren, we got Kamala Harris, we got Jill Biden, we got Barack and Michelle Obama. We have the Clintons. They're bringing back both Bill and Hillary Clinton. I understand Bill Clinton, former U.S. president, Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton, I don't know. Maybe you make her the lunchtime speaker or whenever, when people aren't really watching in prime time. However, conspicuously missing, who is the rock star of the Democratic Party right now? Who is the one that we always like to talk about? If you're on the right, we like to make fun of her. If you're on the left, she is righteous. She is the future. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not on the roster, at least not yet. This tells you something. There's going to be a movement to get her on that roster, I assure you. Otherwise, you're just going to have a lot of controversy, and the Democratic Party doesn't need to deal with that. If they want to make this about Trump, they need to settle their own situation. But I think this is part of something bigger coming. Let me explain something to you. The way Democratic Party works right now, all this stuff you see with the squad and the Green New Deal, all these far left policies, they're being used to generate an enthusiasm in a Democratic base, the far left, the grassroots, as you might say. But do you think Nancy Pelosi has any intention of seeing this ever become a reality? She might like it to be a reality, but that's not her top priority. She's got her priorities. This power, it's maintained power. That's the most important thing above everything else. When you look at those that lead any political party, but particularly the Democratic Party, do what you got to do to win. Then we'll worry about these all of these little issues. But she doesn't like. She never has liked AOC. That's not who she wanted in charge there or in that district. She wanted Joe Crowley, who lost the Democratic primary. The Democrats have gone out of their way since Trump was elected to really, really gin up their base and create this enthusiasm. And hopefully, I think what they intended to do beginning in 2017, especially with Russia and everything else, was to at least put some obstacles in the way of Trump accomplishing an agenda, slow him down, get this thing slowed down, the Trump train slowed down, if you will, and then we can assess the situation and we can plan for 2018 and 2020. So while they're doing that, they get the base fired up. They get people thinking Trump is just the Antichrist, awful. We got to get this guy out of office. But this has consequences. Because these people, they're not your milquetoast Democrats. They're not your moderates. They have some very radical ideas about the way the United States ought to be. And it's socialism. And like I said, it's the Green New Deal. It's all of these far-left issues that we never thought we would be talking about in American mainstream political discussions. That's the consequence. Because you get that fired up, and then you get the AOC's in power, because that's where the enthusiasm is, and then you have a Democratic primary. Well, they're not going to go with the old establishment institutional Democrats that have been in Congress forever, that kind of know how the sausage is made, and just they function as part of the system. They're going with the radical ideologues that are going to go up there, and they want wholesale change. They want quote-unquote revolution, right? And that becomes a problem for Pelosi. So fast forward to now. They don't want that at the Democratic convention. They don't want all the cameras on someone talking about all these socialist policies, or the one guaranteed income, stuff that seems antithetical to the American experience. They don't want that being mainstream, because they know that's going to turn away average voters. So they're going to do their darndest to steer clear of the squad, to steer clear of Green New Deal discussions. They don't want it. They want to be seen as a mainstream American political party, even though it's becoming a situation of their own doing where the inmates are running the asylum. And trust me, the modern Democratic Party is an asylum. It is a mixture, a coalition of a bunch of different interest groups all under one umbrella. The umbrella, the unifying glue, at least for right now, seems to be a dislike of President Donald Trump. But this convention roster is important because I think what you're going to see inevitably is a civil war within the Democratic Party. We saw a little of that on the Republican side going back to the Tea Party era. But it seems to have smoothed itself over, at least for now. Democratic Party, that's a powder keg. What if the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes don't get their way? Bernie Sanders doesn't get his way? They're just doing what they got to do to win. It's all about winning right now. We're at that just win baby stage. Then they get in power, and they don't get what they want. Let's say Biden wins the presidency, and then we wake up November 4th, and it's President-elect Biden. I mean, it's possible, even though we don't want to admit it's a possibility, right? Then what's the first 100 days going to be? What's the first thing Joe Biden's going to do? What's the first thing Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer are going to do? What is going to be? Like, with Obama, it was they did a stimulus, they did Dodd-Frank, they did Obamacare. What are Democrats going to do? What's the very first thing they're going to do? You got to start thinking, well, everybody's going to have different ideas. That's where you're going to get this dissension, and you're going to get this civil war, and it's going to cripple the Democratic Party, I think, going into 2022, if Joe Biden wins. They can't win divided like that. But this convention, you need to watch it real close, because where the enthusiasm is, it's not with Hillary Clinton, I assure you. It's not even with Bill Clinton. It might be with the Obamas, fair enough. The enthusiasm is with this young wave of quote-unquote progressive Democrats that have these big ideas about remaking the way we do things in this country. And if you're not talking about that stuff, if you're just giving out platitudes, or if you're just going to make it about Donald Trump, that might get you through the election, but where do you go after that? So I think the Democrats have some problems. I think there's a civil war brewing within the Democratic Party. Even if Biden wins, I had a discussion with another guy in politics, and he thinks if Biden wins, it's all over. They're going to stack the courts. They're going to do away with the filibuster. It's all over. Don't overestimate Democrats. Or don't underestimate their ability to run as this well-oiled machine. They don't have it. Don't think that they can. Everybody has lots of different ideas, but their primary objective, at least for now, is to get Donald Trump out of office. And that's the fuel that keeps the fire burning. But if they achieve that, and this is all hypothetical, if they achieve it, then what continues? What continues that? What is the fuel for that? Everybody's got a different idea, and if somebody's idea trumps another's idea, then you're gonna have a disappointment, and I think you're gonna have people that are very emotional, as we see with these riots and protests on the progressive left. They're going to feel that same way. It's not going to be that easy. But this convention is very telling, because the Democrats, they're just using the progressive left right now. The Democratic establishment right now is just using that to make sure they have energy. And look, we can look back at the presidential primary on the Democrat side. Joe Biden finishes a distant third in Iowa and New Hampshire. Does awful. Wins one primary, and all of a sudden he's the presumptive nominee. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in the Democratic Party. So you want to keep an eye on this. We're going to take a time out. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Out of kindness, I suppose.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals through the Birmingham. Ooh, Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back. back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Friday to you. Still to come at the bottom of the hour. We'll hear from columnist Steve Flowers inside the State House. Name of the column. You ought to check it out. Get a historic perspective on what's going on in Alabama politics. As always, a pleasure to have him on. And in the 11 a.m. hour, State Senator Chris Elliott joins us. Let's take a phone call real quick. Let's hear from Fireball, who wants to weigh in on what's going on national politics. Fireball, what's on your mind? Go ahead, Fireball.
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Well, it ain't nothing to it, just like my paycheck.
Well,
I'm going to tell you how an old country boy is kind of figuring this Democratic Party.
Lay it on me.
Say, and God forbid, say Biden does get elected president. Within a year, they're going to deem him incompetent because of dementia. And they're going to get who they want in there to do what they want to do.
What do they want to do there, Fireball?
I'm over here at Lowe's and Airport and Schillinger's, and I don't have a real good reception over here. But that's a redneck point of view on this, what the Democrats are going to do.
Hey, Fireball, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. I've heard that a lot, but Biden may be kind of an aloof figure in public, but he is the presumptive nominee. I think behind the scenes, Biden may be more competent, but out in public, he's just bubbling buffoon. You don't get to where he is. I mean, Vice President of the United States, he's seen a lot of things. So, I don't know that they're going to be able to chop off the king's head quite that easy. Once you get that power, man, it's as they say, it's very intoxicating, and he's not going to let it go. Got an update for you here, ladies and gentlemen. A good friend, Speaker of the Alabama House, Mac McCutcheon, has weighed in on the arrest of Will Dismukes, the District 88 representative from Prattville. I read it to you real quick, just a few sentences here. He says, quote, like all Americans, Representative Dismukes is due the presumption of innocence, and it is important to note that the crime of which he is accused was said to have occurred well before he announced his candidacy for the Alabama House. That is true. He continues, as a former law enforcement officer, I have faith in the criminal justice process and trust that he will receive a full and fair hearing. Both Democrats and Republicans have been accused of similar crimes in the past, and we cannot tolerate such behavior, whether a lawmaker involved has a D or an R beside their name. That is Mac McCutcheon, Speaker of the House, weighing in on the Dismukes controversy. Yes, there has been, in our recent history, guys, that the prosecutors have gone after members of the legislature, and they have lost. One of those is about to be, the congressman for the 2nd Congressional District, Barry Moore. Remember, he had his run-in. He was charged with a crime and beat the Attorney General's office, and it has since recovered and is going on to higher office. So it's not out of the norm. There's a lot of weird circumstances with this Dismukes story, though. I just going to point that out. The timing of it with the Confederate flag controversy is the really big red flag for me. But you got to look at the timeline as a whole. First of all, waited 2 years to bring charges. More than 2 years. The crime was said to have occurred sometime in 2016 and between 2018 that he had taken $40,000 over a three-year period from a company known as Weiss Flooring. And here we are, August 2020. It's time to bring charges against Representative Dismukes at a time when all this controversy is going on. Now, that's number one. But number two, the investigation comes way before. The investigation where these charges are going came way, way before the Confederate flag stuff ever started. According to the Montgomery County DA, this investigation started on May 20th. If you go back and look at the timeline, the George Floyd stuff, it starts late May and goes into June. It comes to Alabama, and for as we do in all of these situations of racial strife, we decide we need to start removing the Confederate flag and all symbols of the Confederacy as a way to atone for mistakes. And as that continues and that continues and that continues, Dismukes gets in the middle of it, starts trying to stand there for these Confederate symbols, and then here we are. He gets the Bedford Forest, Nathan Bedford Forrest birthday celebration, and what I would argue is an ill-advised Facebook post comes about 2-3 weeks ago, the weekend of the John Lewis funeral, so it'd been 2 weeks ago, and then here we are with these allegations. So it's been a busy last few months for Representative Dismukes, but it sounds like McCutcheon, Speaker McCutcheon, not calling for Dismukes' head quite yet. But that may come. All right, we got to take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. Same now. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Sitting right here at the Flora Bama. At the Flora Bama. I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Friday morning to you. Still to come on the program today, we'll hear from State Senator Chris Elliott. He joins us in the 11 o'clock hour, so make sure that you stay tuned for that. But join us now, favorite guest of mine, was a regular on my show up in Huntsville. Always a pleasure to introduce him. He's a columnist. You can read him a lot of papers around the state and several of the websites, Alabama Political Reporter, Yellowhammer News, places like that. Steve Flowers joins us on the line. Steve, how are you today?
Great, Jeff. Good to visit with you. I'm glad you're in Mobile.
Yeah, it's a change of scenery, to say the least, but trying to bring a quality political discourse to the 9 to noon time slot here.
They'll enjoy having you there. I'm in most of the papers in Baldwin County, Daphne and Fairhope and Haymanette, and I'm sure Baldwin County. I'm up there in Clark County, too, in the Clark County Democrat. So I'm in most of those papers down in that area of your state, well, especially Baldwin County, always, too.
Hey, Steve, let's get right into it here. Let's talk. Well, first off, Senate race, we know who the two candidates are. We knew Doug Jones all along, the incumbent Democrat. Tommy Tuberville, your assessment of his campaign now that we've had a few weeks to look at it since removed from the Republican primary runoff. He played it safe there at the end, but he still had a big number there on runoff day.
Well, I wrote about that race this week, and I'm going to write again about it next week. He ran a perfect campaign in this regard. He used the old KISS formula, and that is keep it simple, stupid. I'm not saying he's stupid. I'm just saying that's the nickname for that formula. It applies to life, and especially applies to politics. And there were several maxims of Alabama politics, if you will, national politics, too, and this is applying to the presidential race this year. And that one of the first maxims, Jeff, is that more people vote against someone than for someone. As a young page and a political student in my teens, I sat with George Wallace one day. Actually, I was Wallace's representative 15 years later, but having said, I represented Barbara County. Anyway, he told me one day, he said, Steve, you know, more people vote against someone than for somebody. And that's probably going to be true in the presidential race if Trump loses. People aren't voting for Biden. They're voting against Trump, probably because of the COVID thing. But I'm getting off the subject. Trump was the issue in that campaign. And I guess when Tommy Tuberville left his Florida home, whenever he decided to run for the Senate in Alabama, and whoever he got to run his campaign, I don't think he had that sophisticated a campaign strategist. But he ran the campaign as though he did, and all he had to say was, "I'm Trump's man." I guess polling would have told him that, and that's exactly what he did. And going further, I think he takes that same playbook and plays it in the fall and plays it safe. because that's all he's got to do is just simply say, I'm Trump man, and Doug Jones is Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders man. And he won't be telling a lie because Doug Jones' voting record is identical to those three people. I mean, he's voted right down the line with the National Democrats. He got an ad saying he's a middle-road moderate Democrat, but his voting record on every major issue is as liberal as any Democrat in New York or Massachusetts liberal. And I've known Jones since college, and he's always been, to his credit, he never denied he was a national liberal Democrat. That race is going to be easy. Tocqueville have a cakewalk if he just be quiet. He can almost hide. If somebody asks him a question, just simply say, I'm Trump's man. He's Nancy Pelosi's man.
Are you surprised Doug Jones never really tried to be more of a moderate Democrat with his votes? I mean, he could have stuck with his caucus on all everything except the big things everyone's paying attention to: impeachment.
That's a very
Kavanaugh.
Question.
Yeah,
it shows how insightful you are to be as young as you are. That's exactly what us old political heads ask ourselves. When he accidentally won that seat, an anomaly, and we all knew he was a national Democrat, our question was, would he really vote his conscience and be a national Democrat, liberal Democrat, or would he try to compromise and vote moderately? And he took that left-wing approach. He stood true to his philosophy. In defense of him, he believes that stuff. He believes he's a national Democrat. He believes in abortion on demand, no budget limit. No guns. I mean, anything liberal you want to think about, he is a tip antipathy to Alabama voters. He never deviated. And one school of thought says that he's never going to change conservative Alabamians' opinion, and so therefore try to get your base fired up, which is what campaigns are boiled down to now. If Trump wins, it's because he got his base fired up, and if Jones wins, he knows he's got to get the African-Americans and what liberal Cadillac the white Democrats are in Alabama to get out and vote.
One thing I kind of wonder, Steve, though, people... They dismiss Jones as the New York or California senator or third senator because he votes along those lines. But maybe there's something to that, because look at where all his money's coming from. If he had gone the Joe Manchin route, like from West Virginia, and tried to be a moderate Democrat, would Hollywood, would all this money from outside have poured in on his behalf, and would he have been able to be even remotely competitive against the eventual Republican nominee in November?
Well, you got to remember how he got elected, and that was in an accidental anomaly, when it really was not clear to the average voter who votes in the Moore-Jones race. It was about personalities, and Moore had all that avalanche of negative publicity, and he was known nationwide as anti-gay rights and anti-gay marriage. Well, if there's any strong gay community in the world, it's in California. And that's why those liberal gay people in San Francisco loaded up on Doug Jones. He's a superstar out there in California. I mean, he's the only Democrat in the South. He's pro-gay rights, pro-anti-gun, pro-abortion on demand, against Trump, vote to impeach Trump, vote against every Supreme Court justice as conservative. I mean, he's a superstar. He's a celebrity out there. Matter of fact, he can run for senator in California and come close to getting elected in Alabama. I've written in my column, I call him the California kid, because they fell in love with him, because here's a guy who's a Democrat in Alabama who's against Roy Moore. Moore had become a lightning rod around the country. He was like George Wallace or whoever you want to say. He was known as the most right-wing person against gay rights in the country. And so to have a chance to beat him was those California people got excited about that. And they just writing six again. They probably think he's still running against Roy Moore.
What are you hearing from Senator Shelby, the business community? What do they think of Tuberville's ascension to the Republican nomination?
Well, as you know, Senator Shelby really preferred Senator Sessions because he knew what he had with him and served 20 years with him. Doesn't know what what he would have with Tuberville. But obviously, Shelby is for a Republican winning that seat. But he has not developed a relationship with Tuberville like Tuberville should have gone there the next day and developed a relationship with Shelby, because McConnell's not going to load him up with the money that he can get unless Shelby tells him to. Shelby has raised most of that money for the National Republican Senatorial Committee, or probably 10% of it anyway. And so, you know, that's something Tuberville needs to do. He'll win either way, I think, with a lot of money, but he could have a couple $1 billion more if he'd go hat in hand to Senator Shelby. Shelby doesn't really know him. He likes him fine. Doug Jones has tried to cultivate Shelby. He goes down there and has wine with him every day, and so Shelby personally likes Doug Jones, but he sure ain't going to vote for him, because if he does, I'm afraid the Senate's in jeopardy. The United States Senate's majority for the Republicans. And you know what happens if that happens? Shelby loses the chairmanship of appropriations. So I guarantee you Shelby's going to be for Tuberville. He'd be for rather have you, because, you know, you got more common knowledge. You probably do go up there and kiss his ring, but, you know, that's where he is on that thing. And the business community's got nowhere else to go. And obviously that Club for Growth got interested in it, too. And I'm, you know, that they're going to help Tuberville. Tuberville's going to have plenty of money.
What about
he just need to take the bait and try to debate or get into the weeds on personality.
What about the farmers? Alpha was early on Tuberville, and then that it looked like it might have been risky at the time, but the Farmers Federation, that endorsement has really paid off for them. They're going to have an ally in Washington, D.C. with Tommy Tuberville.
Again, very astutely observed on your part, and I'm over my head. That's the last paragraph of my column that is on up this week, is that he owes a lot to the Alabama Farmers Federation and Alpha for his election. And quite frankly, he needs to ask for a seat on the Senate Agriculture Committee. We haven't had a seat on that Senate Agriculture Committee since Howell Heflin was there. And that's the seat they're running for. You know, Heflin was there 18 years, and he became chairman of agriculture. And he did a yeoman's job for agriculture in Alabama. And then Sessions ran that seat 20 years, and this is the seat Tuberville's running for. And the seat Jones is sitting in is Howell Heflin's old seat. But Heflin did a yeoman's job for agriculture. He realized how important it was to Alabama. And I think Tuberville realizes that they gave him credibility. I don't think people were taking him seriously until Alpha came out and endorsed him. And that endorsement, I think, is the real key to his getting impetus in the Republican primary. And he does. But I do think he owes it to that. I think he knows that. I've written it several times. And I've told him that. I says, Coach, you know, you owe a lot to Alpha. And he said, I know it. But he even said at the election night, I appreciate Alpha's endorsement. And it is very important in the Republican primary. You know, a lot of people besides farmers follow that ballot because they know it's conservative. They're going to get the most conservative person. But maybe he will ask for a seat on agriculture.
Well, it would make sense because he's got the farm in Auburn. A lot of his support, I would say, probably comes from Auburn alumni. That tends to be more agriculture leaning. It would seem that's where his if there's a Tuberville base, it's from the kind of Auburn side of the equation.
You can see the results in the primary. He was stronger in the rural areas. I'm not saying that's because of the Alpha endorsement, but also, you know, that endorsement of Alpha is not made in the corporate headquarters of Alpha. Jimmy Parnell, the head, does not just say, we're going to endorse. You don't just go see Jimmy Parnell for that endorsement. You have to go out there and see every former leader, there's a president of the farmers in every 67 counties. And they go in there and they vote. Now, having said that, I think that out of those 67 farmers, represent Baldwin County and Mobile County and Clark County, the president of those associations, the president of Alpha, Alabama Farmers Federation, in every county. As you said, I imagine most of them are Auburn fans, and most of them are probably Auburn graduates. So, you know, Auburn football was dear to them, and they knew Tuberville was.
What happens to Jeff Sessions? Does he have any future, you think?
I've always thought that Jeff Sessions should have just gone to work for a think tank up there in Washington. He really was an ideologue, and he's 73 years old. And he's been in Washington so long that his wife feels at home there, and his children and grandchildren are there. You get that age, and your grandchildren become your paramount interest. And I imagine he just—I don't think he comes home. I think he stays in Washington at this, and I don't think he'll lobby. He doesn't like to—he doesn't like to ask for favors. So I don't think he lobbies at 73 years old. But I do think he might latch on and work in a think tank or something. I think he stays in Washington though.
Real quick, we'll wrap it up kind of on this. I wanted to get your thoughts on the second congressional district. The Barry Moore didn't just win. He won by 20 points. Outspent by a mile, $2 million from Jeff Coleman. What do you make? How do you think we got to that point down there in a second?
The whole story is that Club for Group. They tried to buy that first district race down there in Mobile. And I say this in my column, Jerry Cole must be one popular, strong, well-thought-of Mobilian to overcome that Club for Growth anti-negative money he overcame in that first district. Coleman cannot do that. And I guess the four-month layoff, because of the COVID thing, the Club for Growth would try to win a seat, and they bust a poll that district and saw Coleman's support was mile wide and an inch thick, you know, and it was, and all they were doing was voting name out there because it was funny, but they turned that thing around. He had a 40-20 lead. Moore barely made the runoff, but Moore won 60-40. I saw it coming. I saw the money. You can't spend the Club for Growth spent $1 million in 3 weeks, the last 3 weeks of that campaign, in very well-designed, vicious, and disingenuous ads in that district. Brochures, TV mostly, radio too, and $1 million in that second district. That media market is not as expensive as Mobile or Birmingham, not nearly as expensive as Birmingham. $1 million in that media market. Club for Growth simply bought that district, bought that race. They tore Coleman apart. I told somebody, if I had $1 million spent against me in 3 weeks, and that media market with vicious and disingenuous ads, my mama wouldn't have voted for me. Going back to my first ad, more people voted against Coleman than voted for Moore. It told that, the whole that story, that place was Club for Growth. That's been the story of this year's campaign in Alabama, is their interest in Alabama and the deep pockets they got. And I'm beginning to see, Jeff, that they're going to play in this Senate race. I don't know what they spent, but they've got three unbelievably effective ads running against Jones right now. And I bet you their buyers already have $1 million in that Senate race. I don't know that.
Steve, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. Before I let you go, tell folks where they can read your column, where they can find it, if they so choose to.
As I mentioned coming in, I'm in almost, I think, in all papers in Baldwin County, and the ones around Mobile. But my website is steveflowers.us. My column comes out every Wednesday online. But as you mentioned, some of the online publications run it too.
Hey, Steve, as always, thanks for making time for us on this Friday.
I look forward to it again, Jeff. Thank you.
Will do. That was called with Steve Flowers here on the program. We're going to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Living their lives, waking and baking. Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. And welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Friday to you. Coming up in the next hour, we'll hear from State Senator Chris Elliott. Make sure you stay tuned for that, real quick before we go to break here. Nancy Pelosi just on MSNBC. I don't think it matters who the vice presidential candidate is historically. It's probably true. How many of y'all remember Tim Kaine? Tim Kaine ever pop up in your mind? Maybe it doesn't quite matter as much in Democrat elections. I would say one time it did matter. Sarah Palin in the McCain campaign. Palin really turned that campaign around, but does this matter? The Veep stakes, always a media fascination, and then you know, a year later, do we even remember the debate about the serious nature of this? And what does this mean? Well, voters, why, you have to pick somebody from a swing state or a purple district or things like that. Democrats aren't going that direction, it appears. A lot of the people that are on the short list, Kamala Harris tends to be the front runner right now. California, that's not going for Trump anytime soon. Karen Bass as well from California. Also, there's Val Demings, perhaps. I haven't heard her name as much, but from Florida. Others, Elizabeth Warren, nope, that's not going. Massachusetts isn't going Republican. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
West Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-834-1141. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-834-1141. 800-834-1141. That's 800-834-1141.
Turning up your voice. FM Talk 1065. WAVH FM. Daphne Baymanet, Mobile.
New York schools to reopen. Decline in unemployment.